time to feel the rush of the Round Table, live on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Roundtables for Burke Financial, offering homeowners personalized mortgage solutions for approvals in as little as an hour. And fast funding, visit burkefinancial.ca. Their brokerage license number is 13111. Joining us, host of The Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa, Bill Carroll. Hello, Bill.
Good to be here. Hi, guys.
And diversity and inclusion consultant with the Diversity Agency. Always great to welcome back Andrea Barrett. Hey, Andrea.
Hello. Hello, gentlemen.
Well, let's use that term very loosely. Oh, there you go. Thank you.
At the buzzer.
I was like, wait a minute. This doesn't... Ah, that's right. That's right. That's right. All right. The SNC-Lavalin Group, two of its former executives are now facing new criminal charges. All sorts of different things involved here. Allegations of bribery, fraud, all sorts of stuff. This is related to a bridge contract, the Jacques Cartier Bridge in Montreal nearly 20 years ago. A lot of people, though, Bill, are now saying, well, wait a minute. Why are these charges coming to light now, a couple of days after the election? SNC-Lavalin, the Liberal government, there's been a lot of, history there. Is this just a coincidence, or is this something that was purposely planned in your mind?
Well, it was a nice coincidence, wasn't it? Certainly worked out well. Would have added a little heat to the fire on the Jody Wilson-Raybould book and those allegations coming back to light. Listen, in Quebec, they're so convinced that the rest of the country's just out to get them, and if SNC-Lavalin had been a Toronto company, we'd all be excited the Liberals wanted to step in and try to save it. I don't know how much of a game changer it would have been election-wise, but I would like to know, since we know that the Trudeau government has no problem intervening in the justice system, did they get a heads up about when these charges might be laid and so they rushed the election? Or were the charges held back until after the election ended? Or is it just a coincidence? I think they're very interesting questions, almost as interesting as UFOs. Are they out there?
Exactly. Andrea, I'm sure we'll get a direct answer from our prime minister. He's known for those things.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Direct answer. Sure. I agree with Bill. I love those questions. Timing is everything, isn't it? So we're looking at forgery. We're looking at fraud. We're looking at fraud against the government. So last year, they had to pay almost $2 million. A previous executive was sentenced about 8 years. And here we are yet again. Timing is everything. If, on a bright note, if this helps Jody Wilson-Raybould sell more books, all the power to her.
A Brampton judge has ruled that prosecutors can introduce blood and drug evidence that they say is central to the case that a 21-year-old Brampton man was impaired by drugs when he caused a June 2020 crash that killed a mother and her three young children. I'm sure everybody's familiar with this case. The judge saying, although this man's charter rights were violated in the police's collection of some evidence, this is from the judge, directly from the ruling, the cumulative nature of the breaches in this case weighs more in favor of inclusion of the drugs and blood evidence. She went on to say there's a strong societal interest in the adjudication of impaired by drug cases where multiple deaths are caused. Now, this sent up a lot of red flags for Ryan earlier this afternoon. I'll start with you, Bill. Are you thinking this is a pretty slippery slope as well, or did she make the right call?
Well, I feel like instead of asking me, you should ask somebody protesting outside a restaurant, because it seems to me we got millions of experts suddenly on our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, right? Everybody's an expert now on the Constitution and great where the point. Lines are drawn. You know, on the surface, it feels like a kind of a victory for justice, because I think we're all a little sick and tired of hearing situations where it looks like somebody gets away with something based on a loophole. But these things are important. You know, we can't allow police to come in, kick down your door without a warrant, hold you down to the ground, and take your blood as a sample and then use it as evidence. That's why these rules are in place. That's why there are procedures in place. So we don't want to see that happen. But I do kind of agree with the judge on the surface, based on what I know, that in this case, that's not what happened. This is not the extreme example of what we want to prevent. So there's probably a minor breach here, but does the overall cause of justice outweigh that? I think it does in this case. So I'm not a judge, but I like what I see on the surface here.
Is this the type of reading you'd like to see from a judge, Andrea, when it comes to a case like this where there's multiple deaths and, you know, that evidence is going to make a big difference, even though he pled guilty to the vehicular manslaughter part, but not the drug part of it?
You know, Jay, this one is hard. I'm in Brampton right now, literally around the corner from where this tragic accident happened. I remember when this happened and how sad it was and how traumatic it was for everyone. The concern is you can't violate anyone's charter of rights. We know that. So if that was just a question, can you violate someone's charter of rights? We know the answer is no. In this case, with this particular situation, I think the judge made the right call. This was not his first charge. And it's so emotional, and it was the right thing to do. Yes, they had a warrant for the blood. They did not have the warrant for the urine, but this was the right, I think it was the right thing to do.
Hold on, because I'm going to be the pushback department here. Are we saying that in a world where if it's a high-profile enough case and enough attention is drawn to it and it's something we all find heinous and it's the, you know, the cause of the day, so everybody is, we're all just willing to look past the fact that cops didn't do their jobs? I mean, ultimately, they didn't do their jobs. This is a kind of case that could have precedent attached to it, and if it gets anywhere close to the Supreme Court, I don't want this to be the norm.
This isn't the norm, I would agree. And I said it was hard. I said this one was hard.
Yeah, it shouldn't be about how high profile the case is. That should be irrelevant. I think what the judge is looking at here is how egregious was the breach of rights versus how serious the charges are. And what's the intention? You know, what's the intention when laws and charters are drawn up? Is this what we really wanted to protect against? I mean, this blood was taken from hospital, as I understand it, and not, you know, they didn't sneak into somebody's bathroom in the middle of the night and take it. And I think there is a difference in that case.
And they also found drugs in his car. There's a lot to this one. We encourage you, if you're not familiar with the story, to Google it for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about these anti-vax protesters, hopefully for the last time. The ones who picket outside hospitals and schools and daycares in Quebec will now face a fine as high as $10,000, depending on how rowdy they get. Good idea, Bill. Does Quebec have the right system here?
Well, again, right, the theme continues, right? We're trying to balance all these various rights, people's rights not to get vaccinated versus somebody's right to be safe when they go into a restaurant or their workplace or whatever. And now we're talking about a really fundamental thing in democracy, which is our right to protest. But, you have to let common sense rule the day here. Are you offended when someone stands outside an abortion clinic and gets in the face of a woman making the most difficult decision of her life? I'm against that. No matter where you stand on abortion, that's not the place to take that argument. And this is not the place to take your anti-vax argument to a hospital and to daycares and schools. So, you know, and it's not unreasonable. You have the right to protest, but police often say this area is off limits. This is where you have your permit to gather. So I don't think this is unreasonable here. And I think what they're doing is disgusting. So even if it's a little heavy handed, I'm okay with this one.
Andrea?
We have the right to protest. Absolutely. In front of a hospital where people are sick and are possibly dying is not the right place. In front of a daycare is not the right place. We have the right to protest. I support this fine. 12,000, I'd make it 52,000. Let's increase it. Don't protest in front of little children or in front of the hospitals. Take that to the government.
So new stats out today regarding the national office vacancy. It's hit 15.7%, highest level since 1994, as people continue to work from home because of, you know, the obvious. As we find our way back, Bill, so many of us doing that hybrid model, so many of these office towers quite conceivably could never fill up again. Is it possible that you're going to do affordable housing, or is it more possible that it'll be expensive condos, or is there some way to do both?
Well, if those buildings are owned by government, I think there's a better chance that they could end up being affordable housing. If they're owned by private corporations, they're going to want to go where the money is. And since we all have retirement savings plans and we want to see them do well, then that's, we all have a vested interest in big corporations making money. So, yeah, I think there will be some affordable housing because of it. I think we also really need to take a deep breath and let's wait another 6 months and just see. I mean, the idea of working at home was kind of cool at first. But I don't know if it's overall more productive, more creative, or even good for us psychologically. So I think more people are going to go back to the workplace than we think.
Andrea?
I like the working from home model. I think people are actually productive. Actually, people are working harder at home than they were in the workforce. Think of all the traveling and the transportation. I like affordable housing. If we could turn all these empty buildings into affordable housings to help everyone who needs one, I think that would be the best idea.
But who's going to buy them so we can do that? Who's going to pay for
that? Yeah, exactly. That's what I said earlier. Yeah, it's a beautiful idea in theory.
Maybe the affordable is not necessarily the low-end income portion of affordable and not necessarily expensive condo, but somewhere in the middle.
The company that owns that building, they're not going to just give it away for affordable housing. You have to buy it from them if you're government and then turn it into affordable housing. All those things cost money.
Yeah, it's different when it's a, you know, if it's a new build and you can put those stipulations in, right? But again, I think it's a good, nice idea in theory. A little tougher.
We'll just remind the city
practice.
Again how much they spent on hotels for the homeless and see if they want to
well,
put different funds to a different
It cost $2 million to clear a park, so maybe we've got a lot of cash I'm not sure about. Okay, we had a great conversation about a tweet sent by a guy named Rex Chapman. He's a pretty famous guy on social media. He basically talked about the first time your parents brought home a microwave. It was a bit of a game changer for him. Bill, do you remember that one thing your parents brought home and you thought, oh, wow, this is something?
Well, when we moved from Scotland and they brought a television into the house. Whew! And then upgraded a few years later to color. That was a big deal. Does that age me a little bit? You know what? The biggest change, I think, that I remember in my life was not at home. It was the office when the first fax machine showed up. And you could move documents from one place to another without mailing it in an instant. You know, you could download an entire document in like 25 minutes. It was miraculous. So that, to me, was the biggest thing. I couldn't believe when the first fax machine arrived.
And, Bill, you could get a contract offer while you're on the beach.
Well, I didn't have a fax machine on the beach, but I could do that now on my phone.
Yeah, what about the tiki hut?
The bar did. The bar did. Andrea?
You know, for us, it was the VCR and the camcorder. I remember when that came into the house, was very exciting. We didn't do a lot of home videos before that. For us, this was the thing. We had VHS, we had beta, we had both. Taking the videos, looking at all the grandkids, looking at our parents, and then being able to watch it on tape. I remember those
days.
So
it's still flashing midnight, isn't it?
Exactly. That in the microphone.
Listen, I still have some VHS tapes. I need to get them converted. I still have some VHS tapes.
I also give applause to the person who wrote in, what's the one thing one of your parents brought home that changed everything? Somebody wrote The Mistress, which I thought was an interesting
That's a
response.
Game changer, yeah.
Right. Bit of a game changer, sure. All right.
Ooh, better than the facts. Why didn't I think of that one?
Bill, Andrea, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Our thanks to Mike and to Donnie as well this afternoon.
Also, thank you for being part of the show today. We hope you have the best Thursday night ever.